Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, my guest is a person from a very elite category. He is a two-time GeoMob speaker in different cities. He has spoken in Barcelona a few years back, and more recently now in April of this year, in April of 2024, in London. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show Will Waters, who also is in the unique category of being a fellow geospatial podcaster. So I think we're in for a treat. Will's podcast is called the Geospatial Index, which is also the project that he works on, which is what he presented at GeoMob London a few months back. So we are going to learn all about what exactly the Geospatial Index is and what Will is working on. Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ed. Privilege.
What is the Geospatial Index?
Succinctly, it's a listing of 351 publicly traded geospatial pure play companies and related companies. So everything from Aerometrics in good old South Australia, where I'm from, which is an aerial imaging company, all the way across to, for example, Oracle, which has been traded since the 1980s and has a very good spatial database.
Okay, so this is like a financial index, like a index fund is kind of where you are. Maybe take us through the background for those that didn't have the benefit of being there in April when you presented at GeoMob London, and get what is the motivation behind this project, and what exactly are you doing?
Sure. So where does it begin? 2019, I did a 10-week course at Stanford Continuing Studies about value investing, and the world of investing was opened up to me as a result.
And before that, your background was in geospatial, yes?
Sure. So I finished a master's in geographic information systems at the University of Melbourne, 2010. And I've kind of been making my way in a northeasterly direction across the world since then. I did the obligatory, you know, natural gas field project in Queensland in Australia. Like all GIS people, you know, that you have to do your time in natural resource or resource extraction somehow in Australia. Then I was very proud to get accepted as a volunteer as a spatial science advisor for Samarkum Tiengtanaut, funded by Engineers Without Borders Australia. So I was a volunteer in Cambodia for this local non-government organization advocating on behalf of those in urban poor communities, subject to the usual mistreatments by the privileged for, you know, this particularly poor and vulnerable group. Then, you know, after briefly coming back to Australia, doing some more resource extraction stuff, in that case, natural gas and oil exploration, which is actually quite exciting, I'll admit. I went off to Kuwait to help out on a land, there was a huge amount of contaminated land in the oil field. As you might expect, this project was essentially to clean that up. And my role was to verify of the order of 750 calculations of contaminated material and volumes of treated materials, so basically to protect the client from false claims by the contractors over a 4.5 year period. And then I was briefly on a multimodal journey planner project in Qatar for the Ministry of Transport and Communications, which was particularly tough and ultimately failed because of the effects of the blockade between Qatar and the rest of the Middle East due to some conflicts there around 2017.
You have an extensive background in geospatial. Yep. We got it. Okay. And then at some point you decided your future was no longer directly in geospatial, but rather in finance. Is that correct?
I mean, I wouldn't want to say that. I'm a big believer in the so-called scientist practitioner model, for example, in psychology, where, you know, to be an effective psychologist, you're expected to conduct, have a research career that informs your practice. In a similar way, I have the view that to be an effective geospatial, to effectively, to get the full benefit of what the geospatial industry can offer, if I can put it this way, you shouldn't just seek to extract some sort of return from a career or a salary. There's also this thing called a stock market that permits you to buy, to gain an ownership position in not only the company that employs you in geospatial, but the whole industry. So it strikes me as being, as leaving something on the table. If there's a whole bunch of bankers out there who earn a lot of money from essentially your labor, so why not learn a framework? And that's important. Don't gamble. Learn an effective framework that protects you from your urges, and means that you have a level-headed approach to this opportunity so that your ownership of these companies is a fruitful one.
Okay, so if I can summarize then, and also basing on what I saw from your talk in April, geospatial is exceptionally valuable, generates a lot of value. But that value is typically not going to the practitioners, to the GIS doers, but rather to the companies, and thus also to the owners of the companies, the shareholders. And as a result, geospatial people in all forms are not capturing the benefit of what they're doing. Is that correct? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
yes, and my position is not one of a victim. My position is that it's actually our responsibility to take the opportunity that our economy offers us. Not everyone has access to the opportunity via a stock market to take these ownership positions. So my view is that you should put just as much effort into your education, your career development, the diligent and systematic challenging of your boss every few months to get a higher salary. Yes, of course. But from the outset, from literally the day you start your university degree, you should be looking at the stock market. Look at the expression of this industry on the stock market.
Okay. So you're trying to make that simpler by actually compiling a list of geospatial companies, which then the eventual goal is to create some sort of publicly tradable entity so that I can invest into that list, so to speak. So some sort of fund that someone could offer that I could just say, okay, I believe geospatial is so valuable and there's a lot of money to be made here, and that I will purchase this list of geospatial companies. Is that roughly how I envision it?
It does appear logical to try to come up with some exchange traded fund or mutual fund, some sort of vehicle. Yes, that does simplify the ownership experience. I do confess to that idea crossing my mind, but I'm also mindful that it's been an enriching experience for me. And it's led to a whole lot of networking opportunities that I otherwise wouldn't have had through doing the work myself. So, but I get that some people might not be willing to, but I just wanted to flag that that comes with risks, that you won't gain what you otherwise could by taking a full contact approach to this.
Okay. So the first question I have here, Will, is what exactly is a geospatial company? Because, you know, while there are many, many organizations that use geospatial skills, you know, typically it's only one part of the whole, right? It's one function within the organization. So what is your definition of a geospatial company?
That's an excellent question. And honestly, the more I get into this, the more that question arises for me. So I can say that there's 26 different types of geospatial companies, and that's just because at one, I thought I was kind of done with this project after a couple of months and I had 35 companies, you know? I was like, sweet, you know, and I summarized the growth rate and I was like, all right, let's keep going. Or let's kind of put it to one side. We can think about buying those 35 stocks. But Then I came across Crunchbase. My God, then I mean, there's the Geo Awesomeness Top 100 list. Suddenly, you know, as I got into more of it, effectively, the first Top 100 list from Geo Awesomeness was about 1,000 plus companies. A lot of them are private. So I'm only looking at the publicly traded ones because I want to make this ownership experience easy for people. And it's much easier just to set up your brokerage account and just go press buy. It's much harder to take ownership positions in private companies. Anyway, so my first response, Ed, is that it is the 26 sub-indices that I've had to break the overall index of 351 companies down into so that you can somehow get your arms around it. So we've got everything, as I mentioned, Aerometrics before. So, I mean, I should get up the actual overall index. So that's just in the
Let me put some specific cases to you. How do you count? I mean, most people in the world, their interaction with geography, geospatial maps is, for example, through Google Maps. Okay. Hugely successful consumer service used by billions of people. But it's just a tiny fraction of what Google offers. We have no way of knowing, I don't believe it's broken out what sorts of revenues or things Google Maps makes. I'm not even sure how you would count that. But so what you're saying is I should buy shares of Google or should I not? Would Google be an example of such a company? But, but I mean, surely Google is doing a lot of impressive things in their map service, but you know, I'm not sure I would say Google is a geospatial company, if you see what I mean, right? It that's one tiny, tiny facet of the many things that they do.
That's right. Yeah. So I've not only broken this index down into the sub indices, I've also divided into pure play versus adjacent. Anyway, so overall, in answer to your question, it is everything from aerial imaging to Earth observation, and I've got like the new Earth observation companies, basically all of the SPACs that have gone to almost zero. I've also got the more traditional legacy remote sensing companies, Airbus, etc. in there. What else? There's LiDAR as a separate set. There was a massive amount of hype to do with autonomous vehicles that led to a flowering and then a mass die-off of LiDAR companies. So essentially, it is it's everything from the different types of technology to achieve positioning in different domains or different contexts. So relating to positioning, there's also the GNSS or the semiconductor sub-index. And the latest addition was Samsung because they, since 2012, have a positioning team, actually. So, there's all of the various positioning technologies.
But if I may ask, geospatial, as of course the saying goes, everything happens somewhere, right? So geospatial and use of geospatial techniques and technology is so pervasive that, you know, given that spectrum of companies you just talked about, I mean, aren't you just describing the entire S&P 500 what actually gets excluded?
Exactly. And isn't this a really important point about how important we are? I mean, you were saying before that, you know, there's a lot of value that's given to humanity and that investment bankers or investors enjoy the results of. And it is a really important outcome that, yes, effectively, the growth of the geospatial index, an equal weighted portfolio that I'm tracking, has been basically exactly to win a tenth of a decimal or a tenth of a percent, exactly the same as the S&P 500 over the past 10 years. So that may make it sound like it's a pointless exercise because in the end you should just buy the S&P 500. But equally, it's important to know from the perspective of pride in what we do, that Samsung has a geospatial team, sells a semiconductor that achieves positioning along with Broadcom, all these other really important, well-known companies that are really valuable, they all perceive the value of our industry and are trying to derive an income from it. So I'm giving you a broad answer, but maybe that just is an honest reflection of what we confront in trying to get our arms around the value that we generate and get the return that we deserve beyond a salary. In my view, we deserve double the income. And there's a way that we can get it through, in my view, and I'm inching into giving financial advice, so I won't complete that sentence in the spirit of not giving financial advice.
Well, I don't think you're going to find many people arguing, and many people in the geospatial industry arguing that they should not be paid more. But I suspect that's the case probably in almost every industry, right? But I guess my question is, as you just said, why would I not just invest in a general S&P 500 tracking fund or things like that? Particularly because, as you said, the elephant in the room is that a lot of the true value in geospatial seems to be accruing to private companies. I mean, most notably Esri, of course. But also you think about some of the innovative kind of startups that that have arisen, like Mapbox in the last 10 years, or there's a lot of very cool stuff happening, and I have no ability as an investor to participate in that.
That's right. There is an unfortunate phenomenon of the most successful companies being eaten by private equity. What can I say? Of course, it's important to raise the topic, especially for amateur investors of, what the hell do I do even when I'm confronted with a stock exchange? It's important to raise the point of a low cost index fund like the S&P 500. So I love the question, why not just invest in that? And I would have no complaints whatsoever if somebody did. You would get the same effect as just buying all 351 companies. And there's a lot of effort that would go into buying it across 27 odd stock exchanges. That's a big project to manage. But I have to say, then I can use this to illustrate the power of the sub-indices. So there's a consulting sub-index. You've got everything in there from, what is it? You've got Woolpit, you've got WSP, you've got Booz Allen Hamilton. NV5 is one that I like. They seem to be growing quite nicely. In the US, they bought a geospatial company. They have to be in the index. My point is the 40-odd engineering consultancies that do geospatial consulting are growing at a very nice clip and faster than the overall geospatial index and the S&P 500.
So you vision that then you would offer funds around these sub indices? If I'm a believer in Earth observation, I would be able to buy the geospatial.
You can look at the now 19 new Earth observation companies. I'm saying now 19 because one was taken private recently. If you're working in consulting, yes, you could just buy the 40 consulting firms too, in the spirit of deriving the compounded return that taking an ownership position in these companies offers. But my point is that yes, there is the problem. Why make the effort if the growth is just what you can get by buying a low cost S&P 500 tracker? Well, if you look at it in a bit more detail, using your domain knowledge, right? So this is the thing. You should buy what you know. If you only have a chance to have a productive experience with the stock exchange, if you take a long-term, in my view, a multi-generational approach to ownership of these companies, how are you going to possibly hold on in a multi-decade sense to a company if you don't know it? It's going to be tough because the market occasionally, every couple of decades, the market loses 50%. That's going to scare everyone out unless they know a business. So how do you get to know a business? Well, you use your own domain knowledge from your profession. So this is not the case. I'm making the case then for anybody who's a professional. If you're a healthcare professional, well, there should be the health index. If you're a racing car driver, well, there should be, you should buy, the car companies and, the component manufacturers. But the point is you'll have more of a chance of understanding and having conviction in your ownership position during times of upheaval through buying companies that you are in your industry. So that's kind of where you can use You want to say something?
Yeah, I don't know, Will. I'm a little skeptical here in the sense that imagine I work in Earth observation and it's like, all right, let me invest in Earth observation. And then for whatever reason, that industry does badly. Now,
which it has.
So now, and potentially I'm laid off or whatever, or my company it goes bankrupt. Anyway, whatever.
Well, now, so I'm saying that you wouldn't buy it.
Hit there and in my investments. So it's like, yeah, I have exactly. all my eggs
but
in one basket.
I didn't say that you should buy the companies that you are working in. I should say you should use your understanding of the nature of those companies.
Nobody would want.
Right. And if your understanding of the industry says not to buy any, then that's a good thing. Because ultimately, my only aim here overall is to exploit the opportunity that having a stock exchange gives you. So if your knowledge of this particular industry, by virtue of you having spent years studying it and then working in it, means that you know you shouldn't buy any of those stocks, then that's a good thing. Yeah. But there is the chance that you will be able to spot opportunities ahead of others because of your years of studying and decades or years working in the industry. And I think it's a good thing to try to put that knowledge to work, not only in earning a salary, but also in taking ownership ownership positions in companies where a sensible framework supports it. A few qualifications there.
Okay, and what stage is this project in? This is obviously initially you had the idea. You've clearly done a lot of research, but this is a viable financial product that I can purchase already, or no?
Yeah. I feel like things have plateaued. There was a real hunt. I think a lot of us, you love, zeroing in on something, and there's the hunt and the satisfaction with adding more companies. But because I've gone through Crunch, I think I added about 150 companies just from Crunchbase. So after that, and all the other lists I've trawled through, and people have talked to, I kind of feel like I'm done. We're at 351 companies. Maybe there's another 50 out there, but I don't know that I've necessarily missed any significant ones. So I'm at the point where, yes, I could consider standing up a financial product. But really then what I need to do is network with financial companies. So LSEG, S&P 500, BlackRock, MSCI. MSCI particularly interests me. They're the ones that produce and maintain a lot of the stock indices for countries, economies, industries that we all depend on to have a pulse, to gauge the pulse of the market or the activity of the market. So I'd love to have some contributions from professionals to really, from an outsider's view, have a cold look at really what I'm trying to do.
Okay. And all of this this research that you've been doing, this is publicly available somewhere or documented, or it's kind of just, you toiling
Absolutely.
Away or what?
Yeah. www.geospatial.money is the possibly apt-sounding domain. It's essentially a Substack at the moment. If you just Google the Geospatial Index, the podcast will come up as well. Those are so essentially what I'm trying to provide is information. And to trigger conversations through a podcast that I maintain around the edges of this.
Let's talk a bit about the podcast. How long have you been doing the podcast? And give us the format? And it's you talking, you have guests. How does it work?
Yeah, sure. So it's been around since about February last year. On roughly a weekly basis, I'm pushing out some sort of an interview. I've got it's been mainly private companies. There've been the odd publicly traded company. NextNav and AR Way were the two that spring to mind. The publicly traded that have come on. And essentially from this investing course that I studied at Stanford, and then last year I did a product management course through the same Stanford Continuing Studies department, I came up with a format basically for assessing a company. So, in a cliched way, we sort of start off with the elevator pitch, but we're also looking at how management and staff are incentivized. So what ownership do they have in the company? Some questions basically about the dynamics of the business. How do they work backwards from customer needs? How do they make sure that they're always focused on customer needs and working backwards from those? That's a really important one. Looking at growth, things like that. Then there's a few things that, you know, that are unique to the business that I asked them about. And we basically conclude, I mean, there's been some hype around AI. So I sort of, you know, touch on that basically. And it's been interesting to see some more skeptical views on AI recently, too, which has been great. And then there's a final question about how they're contributing to the growth of the next generation of geospatial analysts, basically based around what they're looking for in an apprentice if they were to hire an apprentice. So that's how I handle it.
Okay, so quite a broad range of topics. Just a broad view of the geospatial industry, I guess. So very nice. Yeah. Well, of course, we'll have the links in the show notes so that people can find all that. And, you know, I encourage people to give it a listen. So what else should we talk about here, Will? What else do you want to tell us about your work and your projects?
Yeah, so, I mean, I liked your point about making it easier to gain an ownership, to take an ownership position in the companies that employ us. My brief sort of research about standing up an ETF says that it's of the order of $250,000 to just get through the compliance and the expensive people that you need to employ to do all of that. Then there's listing fees and ongoing maintenance and compliance, you know, to make sure that you're not essentially offering snake oil to an unsuspecting, innocent, person that, right, you know, was hoping to have a profitable ownership experience. So, you know, I'd love to sit down with someone who's set up one of these ETFs and, again, have a cold, hard look at it. And I'm perfectly happy if the outcome is, you know, sorry, just buy the S&P 500. But I can't help but, you know, feel that, you know, knowing that there are significantly higher growth rates available. If you look at just the hyperscalers, so-called, you know, Microsoft through Azure, there's Google, they have Google Cloud, AWS and Alibaba as well, Snowflake's in there. All of those come out of the box with geospatial functions. Those have been growing at, you know, 30%. Per annum. So,
I mean, yes, well, they have, but I'm not sure it's because of geospatial, right? Or it's not because they're experts at geospatial, which
absolutely.
I'm sure they do have experts at geospatial, but, you know, it feels like that's just one of many, 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 you know, battlefields they're fighting.
You're accusing me of cheating.
No, yeah. I'm not accusing you of cheating. I'm just saying that the power of geospatial is that it affects everyone. Right. And so really every business can benefit by a geospatial, or every organization.
So you're saying everyone should buy the index, not just geospatial
people?
Well,
first of all, I can tell you my own investment strategy. Of course, you should be buying the MCSI world, you know, the broadest possible footprint possible. And I just take it as a given that as and when new technologies, be they geospatial or otherwise, arise, you know, these organizations will adopt them and best practices will emerge and they will profit from them.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else to say here. So if you wanted to get more pure play-ish, you could look at Autodesk. And if you look at things from a broader view, you know, more than 50% of humanity these days lives in a city. So essentially, humanity is concentrating in a built environment. Effectively, nature is becoming controlled and irrelevant. And what's most important is that, you know, basically in the future, things will proceed within a building information model that has been designed using one of the 5 to 7 odd companies in the CAD sub-index of the geospatial index. So I think it's sensible to take a view that there you could have a profitable encounter as an owner of a business that works in this space, building out this built environment, this habitat, essentially, for humans.
Well, I agree. I do think the sub-indexes could be quite interesting. If I believe a certain technology or let's say sector is primed for growth, which does happen. And it may be that I, because of unique insights, am able to better, recognize that before others. I could see as a viable path, definitely.
Yeah, there's something else to say here. So because of the more full body contact approach I've taken, where I've literally built this index up from the start. So each of the companies that goes into this equal weighted portfolio and the watch list that I'm maintaining often involves the thought for me, what if I started this company? Or what did it take for, these scrappy individuals in, the mythical, Silicon Valley garage that everybody has in their mind? What did it take? What risk did they take really? Was it such a risk? Was it this scary experience necessarily that a lot of us analysts sitting at our desks, convince ourselves not to get into, not to embark on an entrepreneurial approach? So, I guess this perspective was compounded, I can say, through doing this product management course, last year. I have, and speaking of systematic sort of frameworks, to tackle reality with, I now have a framework, from a university that sort of sits at the center of entrepreneurship, tech entrepreneurship, to ask the right questions to make sure that a systematic approach to identify customer needs of a significant enough magnitude have been identified to form the basis for a company. So, honestly, that actually is more of an exciting prospect for me as a result of setting up this index. It is that each of these 351 companies is a source of inspiration.
Well, I could definitely see that. I do think there's a lot of value to what you've done, just also as a thought experiment to prompt us. That's why I wanted to get you on the show, because I enjoyed your talk in April. The core point being of which, geospatial is generating this immense value. Very little of that value is going to the practitioners of geospatial. So that is a conversation that I think we should be having, and we should think about then what is the right methodology to address that imbalance, right? And probably that's different for each individual. But I think that's an important discussion for people to consider.
I've been doing a bit more research about one of the sub-indices, the indoor one. So there's indoor mapping, basically, or the indoor sub-index basically has three niches, as far as I can tell. You've got the indoor navigation, and that needs to be multi-floor navigation, in some respects, have a seamless experience from navigation between indoor spaces on Google Maps and then going inside the building to the desk, to the hospital ward, whatever. So there's an indoor navigation niche. There's also a real-time locating system or indoor asset tracking niche. And there's quite a number of very large companies like Cisco, Halma in the US, in the UK rather, Securitas, you see security guards everywhere, but they have a real-time locating system solution, again, for hospitals. Then there's also the scanning and 3D tour niche, which is dominated by Matterport. So what I know, continuing the point of humanity more and more occupying a habitat that has a digital basis, a building information model, there's a trend, and don't worry, I'm not making some sort of a pitch here, I'm just observing, right? This is the result of the research I've done. So I guess the next logical step is to look at how are we mapping these indoor spaces? How are we tracking the millions of objects, especially in an Amazon warehouse that's responsible for 50,000 odd packages going different directions each day, some of these warehouses, along with, unfortunately, all of the accidents and deaths that can happen, for example, due to forklift collisions in these indoor spaces. So there's a lot of customer needs, in my view, to solve in ever-enlarging space. These indoor spaces that we design and spend our time in. And I know that, the pure play, the small number of pure play companies, I think it's of the order of six in the indoor mapping space, are only worth of the order of 1.6 billion. And the vast majority of that value is Matterport. So in my view, there's the inklings of, it seems underdeveloped. There's not a lot of value in it, but we know that the indoor space for humans and the habitat that we're building is going to become larger and larger. So I don't know. I think it's worthwhile taking a systematic approach to identify customer needs
there. I agree. I guess I agree with your hypothesis that many of these technologies are now, at the cusp of becoming, very, very common and widely used. I guess the open question is which player is going to benefit from that, or which, who's going to profit from that. But which I guess makes the argument then for purchasing like a sub-index, because you just benefit from the rise of the industry.
Yeah, but also, I think I'll just speak from personal experience. As someone who spent 10 plus years as an analyst, the idea of being an entrepreneur fills me with fear. But I can tell you that it's possible to study it and you learn a framework. And it's principally about taking a systematic approach. I keep using that word, but taking a systematic approach to identifying customer needs. Once you have enough of them, you've talked to 100 plus people, and you're confident that this potentially a large amount of need that people are willing to spend a lot of money solving, then you can build from there. So yes, you can approach these companies to earn a salary from what looks like a nascent industry that's going to grow. You can look at the sub-index that someone like me is maintaining, and provides information about that for free. Or you can begin to call these people, the ones that operate the factories, the hospitals, the car manufacturing plants, things like that, and make your own attempt to identify their customer needs and look at how your geospatial training, your coding experience can help you to stand up some sort of a solution product.
Okay, well, very very thought-provoking, which is what the goal of the conversation. So thank you very much. I do encourage people to give your podcast a listen and to check out what you're up to. And I'll be keeping an eye on it to see how it evolves in the coming months and years. So what is the best way for people to get in touch if they have further questions or want to go deeper?
Just search LinkedIn for Geospatial Index or go to www.geospatial.money.
Okay. We, as I said, we'll get those in the show notes, of course, so that people can find you. So thanks very much, Will. Hope to see you at future GeoMobs.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate the chance, Ed.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. While you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. Hope to see you at an event soon.